Welcome to the 633 Collaborative Podcast, the podcast about people and their stories in the shared pursuit for peace and wholeness in the world. My name is Jimmy Doyle, and I'm your host, and I'm thrilled that you're joining us for today's episode, which is actually part two of a two-part conversation I had with my friend Samara Altai. Samara is an American citizen, but she and her family came to the United States in 2009 as they fled the chaos and violence that was taking place in Iraq and had really taken place since the 2003 U.S. invasion. I wanted Samara to be on the show because, one, she has this amazing and challenging story of what their family faced in Iraq and their journey of coming here to the U.S. as refugees. And I wanted her to share that story because that's important enough. Samara is a fantastic person, and it's amazing the amount of hope and energy she brings to life and to her story, and I wanted to get that out. The other part was that beginning in the fall, in October, there began to be these mass protest movements in Iraq that were mostly made up of young adults, but just large numbers, in the thousands, particularly in Baghdad, that began to protest the corruption of their government and to begin to really to demand that the government be replaced with a government that would take care of the rights and the basic needs of the Iraqi people. And it was really fantastic because it was a peaceful movement, a nonviolent movement. There was violence involved in it, especially as the Iraqi government and militia groups responded to them, with something like 460 people being killed who were a part of the protests through sniper fire and other things. And I think 25,000 injured at this point in those protests, you know, being targeted by the Iraqi government and other groups. And just think about 25,000 injured. That shows kind of how large this movement actually is as people begin to hope that their nation can rebuild. And our media hadn't covered that very much, and I really wanted to get that story out. So I wanted to have Samara come on and help explain that to us, what was going on. But in between the beginning of December and now, so many things have happened in Iraq that I've recorded now. This is my third recorded intro to this episode to help clarify some things. So number one, the first re-recording of an intro that I did was after the Iranian-backed militia groups attacked the U.S. embassy. I wanted listeners to be aware and to have clear that the protest groups, the nonviolent protest groups in Iraq, are not the same groups that have attacked the U.S. embassy. They are actually quite oppositional to each other. The nonviolent protest groups actually want the removal of Iranian influence from their government and would probably be willing for the U.S. to come in and help if the U.S. could come and act in a way that was not out of U.S. self-interest, but was out of Iraqi self-interest. And Samara talks a bit about that in this conversation. So those two groups are separate. But in some media in the world and here in the U.S., there was kind of a conflation of saying that those two groups were the same. And so I recorded an intro to clarify they are not the same. And as a part of that, I wanted to point out, too, that you will hear in this interview, Samara will use the word fight, like in terms of like fighting for our freedom. But what she really, I think, means in terms of like the translation is struggle, because, again, these movements have been nonviolent. And they want to struggle and to stand up for their rights and for their freedoms and for their establishment of a good government, a just government in Iraq. So that was my second intro that I did. And then 2 days ago, the U.S. did a targeted strike against the top general in the Iranian army who has had a long-term influence in Iraq. He's kind of the head of a paramilitary intelligence group that has been working to establish Iranian dominance in the areas of the Middle East and influence. And his name was General Qasem Soleimani. He was killed by this U.S. strike. And now there's all this rhetoric, you know, coming from Iran about how they're going to retaliate in that. And there's a lot of concern about what will happen in terms of renewed violence in Iraq and in renewed Iranian influence. And to be honest, all of that is overwhelming. I don't know how to make sense of where all of that may be going. What I want in this episode for people to hear is Samara's heart for her people, the desire for the end of violence, not the renewal of violence, and the hope that they have for their country. I think Samara captures the heart of the people who have been protesting in these nonviolent manners. And I think it's an important story to get out because here in the U.S., we're kind of addicted to the news of violence. And so we overlook the fact there are people who are sacrificing themselves and working really hard to do something different. And the third thing is this, is that in the mix of not knowing what to do and being overwhelmed with these things, what I love, again, is this conversation that Samara and I have. And I want to encourage everybody not to get lost in the overwhelming nature of it all, but to remember that if you don't know what to do in any other way, find Iraqi neighbors that are in your community or Middle Eastern neighbors that are in your community, because they're present, and connect with them and show solidarity with them for the things that are good and for peace and wholeness in the world. And that's really what I want to encourage listeners to do. So this is a long intro, but I felt like I had to kind of explain some things as we jump into this conversation that took place before a lot of the recent changes. So without any further delay, let's hear what Samara has to say about the peaceful protests that have been going on in Iraq.
Until 2002, until 2003, I guess February, March, Saddam Hussein was in power. Things were stable. They were stable for the most part. And then in 2003, in March, I think, is when it happened in Baghdad, and the Iraqi army and everything, I guess, defeated. I'm not sure what the right word is. And so ever since then, we've changed presidents so many times and prime ministers, because they were still trying to figure out, is this going to be a democracy? Is this, you know, not very stable government since 2003 and still. From 2003 till 2006, everyone, as far as like people, we're trying to figure out, is this going to get better? Do we trust this new government? Is Saddam being gone a good thing, a bad thing? You know, everyone was everywhere. 2006 till 2009, which I was still in Iraq, it was very bad. It got worse, I think. And 2009, that's when I left, but I kept, I left Iraq. I came to America, but I kept, I kept asking my friends. I visited two times since then, and watched the news and everything like everyone else. So I guess from 2009 till now, you can still say from 2003 till now, we never had a government that had Iraq's interest in heart or in mind. And I say that because people's living condition it just gets worse and worse by the year. Pretty much, if you live in Iraq right now, if you've never left the country, you either have money or you have people. People in the government or people who have money that you can still stay there and live a decent life. I would say survive, honestly, not even live. Now, the majority of people, you know, not everybody has money, not everybody knows someone. And so they specifically, those part of the country, I guess, which is majority of people, were going to work. They were not paid. They're still, some of them, not paid salaries. It's funny because at my job today, I was talking to my Iraqi friend, and she was telling me this story about her friend who hasn't had any salaries, and she's been working for 6 months at this government place. So, and this is very common.
To think about that, like, you're working for 6 months, you're not being paid, but you keep working in the hopes that eventually you will be paid?
Yes. Exactly, because you can't just stop because they tell you, oh yeah, we'll pay you. And sometimes you don't work for 2 months or 3 months and they pay you, but you know, they don't pay you that well anyways. But so you don't want to stop, because if you stop, they can be like, well, you stop, you're not getting paid. It's like, it's bad anyways, so you might as well just go to work and, you know, hope for the best, I guess, because you don't have any other option. Because it's a government-owned place, who are you gonna go to, like, say something, you know, like, who are you gonna report to? At the end of the day, it is gonna go to whoever is in charge, and that person doesn't care.
Yeah,
like, it is what it is. The money, the salaries, millions and millions and millions of dollars, I guess, is being stolen, you know,
and that's from just the people. That's from just corruption, like people in leadership.
Yes.
Taking the money
Yes.
for themselves.
I mean, if we just say, however many, I don't know, like a million people, if you want to say a little bit less than a million people who have been working for 6 months with no salary, even if they get paid $400 a month, that's a lot of money. Now, that number that I just calculated is very small. This has been going on for years and years and years. So this is just one example of what has been going on. There's no salary. There's no money. So people are living, like I said, surviving barely. So what they do is like they go sell, I don't know, they go sell some groceries or they buy things in bulk, like tissues or something, and they sell them in the streets. And that's how they're surviving.
Is the government taking care of government services like sewage and electricity and
No, absolutely not. They are not taking care of anything. They it's not even a hidden secret anymore. I mean, it's on the news, it's on the Arabic and the Iraqi news that I said there was this politician that I was watching on the news. They interviewed him. I think at the time he like has retired or he has not in the government anymore. And he was on the interview and he was like, yeah, we were, you know, our salaries are millions and millions of dollars and these people have no food to eat. And he said that. And the person who was interviewing him asked, like, is everyone like that? And he's like, yeah. He's like, even you? He's like, yeah, even me. So it's not like, oh, wow, we just figured this out. This is like, it's so like the I have never heard or seen like something like that, like the audacity to come on TV in front of everyone and say, yeah, like we have been stealing your money and we haven't even been taking care of you. If the person who's in control is corrupted and who can fix something isn't, who is? You know
right,
what I mean?
Right.
So people have finally had enough. Like, it's not about safety anymore, like I said earlier. It's not about, you know, it could be safe. And that's not what they're asking for anymore, because it's somehow safe, I guess. It's just not very livable.
Right.
You know, the school condition, the work condition, the, like you said, the, like the streets or the sewage or the water, electricity, everything
right,
is so messed up. And I went to Iraq in 2018, last year,
yeah,
in December. And I saw that, like, this is like right now happening, real life. Like I stayed with my mom's friend. They knew each other from when they were little. So, you know, I know her like family, and I know she works, and her husband works in oil and gas, and he's always out like traveling. So they have, you know, they're well, I guess they make enough money to like stay there and be fine. But she told me, like, this is not a typical like living. This is not a typical like life that you see now. All the other families, or most of the other families, are not living our life. And when she says our life, like, it might sound like, oh my God, they have so much money and they're, you know, their kids go to school and they have electricity all the time and clean water and all that. This is not a luxury, but to them it is.
Yeah.
You know, 16 years it's been like this. So what happened is people had enough. And I want to say something else before I move on. Like I said, if you have a governmental like job, you don't get paid. That's if you get a job. Like if you work with the government or for a government entity or organization, that's because you knew someone who got you that job, or you paid someone money. You don't just like get hired. And even if you like get a degree in hopes that you, oh, I'm gonna get this degree and I'm gonna go get a job, it's very few people that can get a job. Jobs are not very like, there are no jobs. Like the unemployed rate is, I don't know what the exact rate is, but I know it's unbelievable.
Is this nationwide, like all most of the people in Iraq are having this kind of life, or is it particular areas that are suffering from this more than others? What does that look like? I guess, and my follow-up question with that is, do Iraqis feel unified, or is the nation kind of divided?
So after 2003, with everything that happened, like I said, it was very messy. So they were there were a lot of problems between the Iraqis themselves. Some of them wanted the old government. Some of them wanted the new government. because they hoped the ones that wanted the new government were very hurt by the old one and hoped that the new one would be better for them and their families. And that did not happen.
And we're talking about the first elections that took place, like the change.
No, when I say old government, I mean Saddam.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, so that's what happened. And then also between the Iraqis themselves, that was a problem. Another problem that was if they're Muslim, then there's a Sunni and Shia problem and a lot more. So they were very divided and they were, and a lot of people were killed because of that.
Right.
Because it was very chaotic. Now, you know how they say misery love company? Now, after all these years and these protests, everyone had come together incredibly. It's I cry every time I see a post or watch TV and I see how especially the youth have come together and said enough is enough. We are one and we have to ask for our rights, our very basic rights. So that because of the these protests right now, people have come together and said enough. We are not going to fight amongst each other. We're going to fight for each other. But to answer your question, is it nationwide? Yes, other than the north. In the north, a couple of cities, like three or four, and it's an area called Kurdistan. It's where the Kurds live. Some Arabs live there, but it's a different section in Iraq. It's a northern Iraq. They are better off, way better off than the people who are, like, I guess from, you know, they're not in Kurdistan. So if you're in Kurdistan, you're fine. If you're not, you're not.
Why is Kurdistan doing better?
Because Kurdistan is ran by a different government. It's a separate sector, I guess. And they're ran by different people and different government. Even the schools, they're different school system. They're different language. They have a different flag. It's like a different country. They're just not, I guess, officially separated. And that's just another problem. That's just another issue, a separate issue. So that's what's happening right now is people who are my age, 25, 26, 27, spend their childhood in war, grew up in war, and now that it's somehow safe, they don't have their basic needs or rights. And that's why they are protesting and asking for their basic rights. What they're asking for now is to impeach this current government. They want them out and they want new government in. And there have been talk about, oh, well, how do you know whoever is going to come in is going to fix this? Well, we don't know. But we don't want this government right now. We don't want anyone who is in the government because we know they have been stealing our money and taking our rights. And they are living in, they're probably not even living in Iraq. Like they have houses everywhere. You know, they're millionaires now and their family is well off, but we are suffering. So we don't want them.
Yeah. Yeah, when nothing's working, I mean, what do you have to lose, right? If you're a protester, if you feel like, okay, well, maybe we end up with something just as bad as this, but it's not going to be any worse than this. Is that kind of the hope is for change, but if change doesn't come, it's like, okay, well, we'll just be right back where we were.
I think they want to try. I think they went out to try and they said, like some of them have been interviewed. Some of them, like they were just on a Facebook Live or something. So I watch these videos or Snapchats or whatever of the protesters themselves. And they say that even if this didn't go well the way we wanted to, and so far it hasn't been, a lot of them have been killed. A lot of them have been attacked. And so they have nothing to lose. So they came out with themselves and that's all they have. They don't even have weapons or anything else. And even if they have weapons, they did not use it and they will not use it because it's supposed to be a, non-violent protest. So far nothing has changed. If anything, they're only like attacking them every day. So, but their view is, okay, I fought for my future, for my kids' future. I did everything I can to the point where they killed me and nothing has changed. At least if nothing changes now, no one ever will ever can say Iraqis did not do anything. They just sat there and watched and they gave up for this government. Because a lot of people are like, well, you elected them. You chose these people. Yes, they did. We did. But we didn't know. You know, when you're so desperate and somebody comes and says, I'll help you. I'll give you some water. So you chose them because you don't know anything else. you know, but they've been lied to so many times. So they went out all together, and it's been going on since October 25th. We're coming into December and nothing's changed yet. So at least they can say we tried.
How do you think that this is going to turn out? Like, are you hopeful that it's going to, I mean, and when I say hopeful, obviously the sense that I get from you is that you're a person of hope. And so you are, the reason you're posting the things that you're posting and sharing this information is that you want Iraq to move forward and for it to be a place, you know, that provides opportunity and hope for your friends and family. And so I know that there's that hope element that pushes you forward. Like, do you think that this is going to happen? I mean, will this have the kind of outcome, you know, in terms of steps? Do you think the government will be replaced and new leaders be put in place?
I just, like, as an Iraqi, like, I am Iraqi American, but as an Iraqi, as his, like, I lived there, I was born there, half of my life was there. I still have family and friends there, and even if I haven't, that is my home. So as just, like, I guess, like, if I'm speaking like that, I refuse to not have hope, to say, like, no, this will never change. People have been literally sacrificing themselves for this country and its future, and I can only I just don't want to not have hope, even if everything that's happening, honestly, like, everything that's happening, if I think with my just brain, no emotions, no attachments, how it's been going on for so many years, probably not. But I just don't, I don't want to believe that. You know what I mean? It's just not fair for me to sit. I have everything I want. I literally, compared to them, have everything I want. And I'm thankful and I'm grateful for that. But for them, like, if the only way I can help is to have hope for them, then I will. Hope is all we have, is all they have. Literally, like, they don't have anything else. So I can't say I have lost hope. There is nothing good that's going to come out of this. If nothing, and I hope it doesn't come down to this, I really do hope it doesn't come down to this, but if nothing, I know that my people, the Iraqis, the youth especially, my age, have the country's interest in their heart. You know what I mean? They did not turn against each other. They fought. And I'm very, very proud of them. I know this. And I posted this on Facebook and I said, I have never been so proud to say that I'm from Iraq than now. Because this spirit and the positivity and everything that they have, like, they're so driven for this country. And it's not even for themselves, because, like I said, they have been attacking them, killing them. It's for other people. It's for their future, their children. Just the spirit that they have, I don't think I will if I was back there, honestly. I might be too afraid to go out and fight.
I think you'd probably be right. You'd probably be right in the middle of it.
I you know what? You don't know. Like, me, my husband, my friends, we, like, if it was up to us, we would book a flight and go there and fight for it now. And we say that, but I don't know if I was there. But I'm saying, like, they have every right to say, no, I have lost hope. There is no good that's going to come out of this, because the government is not listening to me. The world is not listening to me. No one is helping me. So I might as well just go home and live my life and just survive, and that's it. But the fact that since the October 25th until now, they're still out. They have never been home, but they have people who help them, to bring them food and water. I mean, they have brought portable showers to them. Now that winter has come, Iraq is very cold in the winter. They brought them, like, blankets and everything like that. They're living in the street. They refuse to go home. They've had enough. That spirit, I don't know if I have. I hope I do. Like, if I ever come to this or have to fight for my life like this, I hope. But if they have hope and they're still fighting, of course I do, from right here.
You know, nonviolent resistance is hard anywhere, but nonviolent resistance in places that have been just broken by violence, I don't understand why the media hasn't picked up on this story from that perspective. Like, this is a place where Syria has fallen apart in a civil war. Iraq was torn apart by a war that happened to it, you know, happened to it. And so many other conflicts in that region. And here are groups of people. It's not just in Iraq. This has happened in other places too.
Right.
But here's this group of people that are saying, we want something different. We don't want to engage in violence, but we do want change. And so we're trying to do something. And they're putting their lives at risk in the process. And it's really an amazing thing. And like, for me, watching it and hearing you talk about this, man, I hope it works, right? Like, I'm in the same place. Like, it would be easy to be cynical, but this would be such a great foundation for something new to start with. It's a different narrative than what's been happening in the past, you know, 16 years.
Well, another thing that's keeping me and everybody hopeful, other than what I said, is since all these years, it's not like they haven't been other protests in Iraq, especially. They have, but they lasted maybe a week or 2 weeks, and they've been shut down, and people are like, okay, well, I guess I'm just going to go home and, you know, live my life. But this has been the biggest and the one that lasted the longest of protest in Iraq. And that's another thing that is making me think, well, maybe, you know, that is a good sign, as, you know, I mean, if good is the right word to use here, you know, like this has lasted so long. I mean, I'm talking about people who haven't been home for over a month, living in the street, in the buildings, whatever they can. So this hasn't happened before. It hasn't happened before like this intensity, and people, especially youth, hasn't come together ever before like now. They have done amazing things so far for themselves and for us. But that's another thing when I think about it truly deeply, and I say, well, this can't be for nothing, you know?
Yeah.
This can't be for nothing. It just can't be. Someone has to, I mean, we have shared, we've talked about how important it is to, like, awareness, you know, share awareness and everything. But then what's the point of being aware if you're not doing anything? Yeah. So yeah, we have shared now. I hope the world knows. And if not, I'll keep sharing to let the world know that what's going on. But, you know, if I hope someone somewhere of power and that can actually do something will turn around and say enough is enough, and I'm here to help you.
Yeah.
Because it's bad.
And I'm assuming that in this group of young people, primarily, they're gathering. I'm assuming that there are some recognized leaders in that group, or if there haven't been, that they're beginning to be developed, right? Because if it's successful, there are going to need to be leaders that can be trusted and that have the integrity to continue the movement into like a policy stage, you know, like as a new government happens, what is our country going to look like, and how do we do it in a way that is fair and just, you know? So that'll be an important thing, like recognizing who the good leaders are.
So there was, that's a good point. Actually, there was this, I'm not sure what his like rank is, but he's in the military, the Iraqi military, and people seem to like him. He's a decent guy and everything. But, you know, not everyone can just go ahead and be a prime minister or president.
Right.
That's just not how it works. So a lot of people have brought this up. Yes, there are some people who are qualified, but it just doesn't happen like that. You know, they can't just go and take things or even run. Like, they're not, like, by law, like, qualified to run. But it's like, if you are somehow of a leader of a power, like a politician or something like that, a good politician, I'd say, and you want to do something, they either won't let you, or you don't have like enough people to help you, because with how much money they have and how much power they have and how much outside help they have so much power over anyone else. And I hate to say that, but it is the truth. So we need someone who is, in my personal opinion, I might be wrong, but I think we need someone else to get inside. Maybe the USA, maybe someone else, I'm not sure, but to go in, because even if every single Iraqi person came out, every single one, young, old, everyone came out and said, this is not what I want and I want a better life. If they all are ruled by the government who doesn't care, I mean, and won't care, and they have so much money and power, and they are provided by a different government from a different country that is also very powerful, they're not going to be heard. They're going to be heard, but nothing's going to be done. Only more damage is going to be done. So I think at this point, we need a more powerful government or someone in power who will come in and be like, no. Just like when the U.S. came in and they thought Saddam was bad, I think they might very well just go and just kick everybody out and be like, no, enough. These people have had enough. Now this is who we think should be, you know, in charge.
How would I say this? I would have an assumption that if the U.S. came in and did that again, that it would create a couple of things. More resistance, resentment maybe, it might be the better word. And I would be concerned that it takes it out of the hands of the Iraqi people themselves, that it becomes about American interests and not about Iraqi interests. Like if the U.S. could come in and actually be a true mediator and say, hey, you know what, we want the Iraqi people to decide what their nation is going to look like. If we could really do that, that might be very helpful. But I'm not sure our track record has been great on that at this point.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I agree with you 100%. I don't think the first time, which is, well, not the first, but, you know, in 2003.
Yeah.
When the war happened, I don't think, and you can put this in or you can edit it out, it's up to you, but I don't think America had Iraq's interest in heart. I don't think it was for us.
Yeah, I would say that I would agree with you. I don't think that we had Iraq's interest at heart at all. Yeah.
You know, or the Middle East, if you would. But right now, I mean, if America can get in again, but an actual, like, genuine, like, we, like, these people need help, this country needs help, this government needs to go away, if they go in and that, I don't know if they would or they're willing to spend all that money and send all these people there to do that without, and I hate to say it, but without, like, with nothing to take, you know?
Right.
And I can't think of anyone else who can enter. And because there is also a thing about, there's also have to think, like, when I say Iraqi government, they're not Iraqis. They're a couple of men or some women, I guess, too, from Iran who are ruling Iraq right now. And this isn't a secret anymore either. They do claim to be Iraqis, but they're not. And every single Iraqi knows this now, unless they have some kind of a benefit of what's happening right now. They're going to tell you, no, Iran is good and they've been helping us and all that. And I can tell you right now that is not true. Whoever is going to tell you Iran is helping us or Iran has Iraq's interest at first, it's not true.
Iran's looking out for Iran's interests.
Yes, absolutely. And you know, and that's it. So if an Iraqi person tells you, or an Iraqi citizen, I'd say, who's living here or there, tells you, oh no, Iran is not the problem, then they, I don't know how to say this, like they're benefiting from what is happening.
Yeah.
That's it. That is the only reason, you know, and they don't care about other people. Like, this is not touching me. This is not affecting me or my family. All of them are here, but it doesn't mean that I'm gonna not care or not call it how it is. You know what I mean? So,
well, and it's, I mean, you're an American citizen, but Iraq is still your country, right? It's your people in the sense of, I don't live in my hometown anymore, but my heart is with my people in my hometown. And I think anybody would be that way. And on the Iran issue, like, you know, during Saddam Hussein's era, the conflict between Iran and Iraq was going on, and there was persecution that Saddam did of certain segments of Iraqi society. And some of those people, you were telling me, they fled to Iran. And after all the conflicts, some of those people, along with some Iranians, have come back and inserted themselves into or back into Iraqi politics. And now many of them have power. Is that correct? Is that
correct? It's just history, like what Saddam did to the Kurds or to the Iranian people, or, you know, other people. And now they're, I guess, back for revenge or whatever. But the really who people who are paying for it is the it's not anyone in the government or Saddam. I mean, Saddam is long gone. Him and his family and everyone else, they're gone. They don't even live in Iraq anymore. His daughters and his other family live in Jordan. Some of them are in Jordan. Some of them are somewhere else. I mean, they don't have anything to do with this anymore. Yes, they have might have started it, but before people have suffered, now people have suffered. I think it's just, it just keeps being about politics and other people's, other governments' interests, but not the Iraqis.
Right.
Never the Iraqis.
So you have greedy leaders. You have leaders that are there from outside foreign influence. And this protest is the Iraqi people saying, we want to return to a state of life where we can take care of ourselves and have lives.
Yep.
So what do we do? What do I do, right? Or people who are listening to this and they've heard your story as someone who came here out of that conflict in your family, and now they have a sense of what these protests are, and maybe we're thinking, you know, man, it sounds just like we've been talking about. It sounds confusing and it sounds overwhelming. We don't want to give up hope, but what would you like for listeners to do as stories of this continue to develop?
If I have like just one set answer, I would have done it myself. I guess from far away, we are a little limited of what we can do. First, you need to be aware of what's happening. Like if you really want to care and listen to this, you need to be aware of what's happening, such as listening to this podcast, doing some research on your own, yeah, and getting a little bit of idea of what's happening. Now, this is the first thing, because you can't help or do anything if you don't know what's going on. Now that you know what's going on and everything like that, there's many ways you can help. We do want to get our voices heard by the people who can do something. So calling your state representative or someone like that who can get your word to the people who are higher than him or her. That's one thing you can do. Just share what's happening, maybe discuss it with someone. Maybe they have an idea. If you want to help the actual people who all are protesting right now as we speak, there are, I would be careful, but there are some ways that you can donate to help them, because they have been out of jobs, and even because they have been out of jobs for a while, or because they had a job but because of the protest they left it. If you want to donate, you can. There are a lot of links. I would be careful where to. If you need me to provide some, I can. I'm not sure what else. I mean, that's what I have been doing. I have been contacting, but because I can, and I have people who are living there, contacting people who are like my friends or my family, like what I have left of my extended family there, to call them and to ask them what's happening, because sometimes the news either don't show you what's happening or exaggerate what's happening. So I always call and make sure that I know what's happening. Is like what I think is happening is actually happening, not because I heard it from someone or I saw it on the news.
Are there news sources that you trust? Like if you were going to say to a listener, hey, here's some news sources that you could see in English that are actually going to give you a pretty good view of things.
To be 100% honest with you, I am only watching the Arabic news right now because I don't know what to trust. I mean, I know some channels are not even showing this, but I'm only watching the Arabic news. If I start watching some channel that's showing what's happening, honestly, what's happening, I haven't seen anything like that yet. But if I do, I'll give you like that channel name or sure, network name or whatever. But if you are on Facebook and you really want to know what's going on or more of what's going on, going on, you're more than welcome to like share my Facebook or my email if you want to, and I can send you links or links to you can donate or links to the news or articles where you can follow these things, because you really want to be careful what to see or what to hear, because you know how this can go. I'm only watching Arabic news, and most of my news, honestly, I get from either people who live there or from Facebook. A lot of protesters who are in the area go on Facebook Live, but I speak Arabic and I understand it, so it would be pointless for English speakers to listen to this to the lives. But that's how I get my news.
I think that becoming informed is the first step, and the problem is, I think when we start to get informed, we get kind of overwhelmed. But to continue to understand that information and knowledge is good, because out of that comes that sense of awareness and comes that desire to connect with people and support people. And I agree with you that, like, I know that people feel sometimes on social media, it's like, I just don't want to see political posts all the time. But I think it's important for us to share things that are happening in the world that are important. And so I would say for people listening, like, when you see a story about this, actually look into it. And then the ones that you think are important, share those stories so that the knowledge does increase about what's going on. Because we as Americans, we're a part of this situation. We became a part of this situation before 2003, and we've been a part of the situation certainly after 2003, we've been a part of the situation. So we kind of have a responsibility to pay attention to what's happening in these places. And I think too that, you know, just like you and I having this conversation, we were connected by mutual friends.
True.
And in any community, certainly in Houston, but here in Oklahoma City, any major town, there are probably people who are from Iraq or from the region. Anybody here in the Oklahoma City area who wants to connect with people who can say, yeah, I can tell you firsthand about what's going on. We have those kinds of connections for sure.
And there are some, I think I mentioned this last time we talked, but there are it's just a group of people who like me, you know, who care about what's happening. They're from Iraq, and they always have like these, I guess if you want to call them protests or like gatherings where we go out. Like the last one they had was a couple of days ago, and they also like give links and how you can help or how you can share awareness or what's happening or updates or donations or stuff like that. The last time what they did, it was a very small thing they did. I mean, they do a lot, but one of the things that really touched my heart is they had like this really big Iraqi flag, and everyone who went to this gathering signed it, and they're going to ship it there and they're going to give it to the people who are protesting. I mean, I know this is not probably going to fix it, but even emotional help is helpful here. You know what I mean?
I think we underestimate how much those things matter to people, right? Because they're in the middle of this and they feel like the world doesn't care. And then getting something that lets them know, hey, people are paying attention and people are noticing.
Absolutely. I mean, if I was there and I got that flag, because you have to think sometimes they cut the internet, like they cut the internet. There's no internet. There's no way for you to communicate to people who are outside of Iraq or in Iraq. Sometimes they cut the internet on the Iraqi people so they can't, broadcast all what's happening. When I say they, the government.
Yeah.
You know, they cut the internet. Right. So, so if I was there and I can't get my, when I'm like, oh my God, I'm alone in this. And is anyone even hearing me? And I get the flag or a letter or money or anything. And I know that people know, just that is probably gonna make me feel so much better, because I'm going to feel, wow, these people are all the way across the world. Literally, you know, they care. They're thinking about me. They know. So hopefully my voice is heard. So I know my voice is heard. So
I think that's real important. Yeah.
And another thing that you like, instead, because we tend to assume things. I do this too. Like, ask, don't assume. I know sometimes like we fear of what we don't know. We fear of what we don't know. So if you have any questions, if you have more questions, if you just want to know more, like I said, feel free to share my Facebook or my email. And I'm more than welcome to just have a chat with you, and I'll talk about this, you know. I don't think there is anything in my or my husband's life right now that is more important that is happening. And honestly, if anyone wanted to know more, that is, they're doing me a favor. It's not the other way. You have to know if you're listening to this, and also for you, like, you're doing us a favor. It's not the other way around. It really isn't. So thank you.
We will all keep working towards it together, and we'll see. We'll see what happens. We'll keep walking towards hope, right? That's what we keep doing.
Of course.
Thank you so much for coming on and sharing your story. You know, I hope that we can actually have some more of these later, and hopefully it'll be in better times, right? Hopefully some of this will be in times of progress where things have moved ahead for your friends and family who are still in Iraq and a nation that you care about. But also, I just enjoy learning things from you, so hopefully we can do one of these again.
Of course. Yeah, definitely. Thank you so much.
Thank you for tuning into the podcast today. I hope you found it encouraging. Even as we face the complexities of things going on in the Middle East that can sometimes paralyze us in terms of action or seem insurmountable, I hope that in hearing Samara's perspective, that you could hear the hope that she has and the commitment that she has to her home country and her people. And I agree with her that we cannot abandon hope in these things. Jesus calls us to be peacemakers and to pursue peace. And so we're not overcome by the notions that there cannot be peace. The reality is there are people who are pursuing peace and sacrificing their lives for that sake. And we really, really, in my mind, we can't let them down by giving up hope ourselves. And so even having said that, you may be like, okay, well, so what do I do? And I'm just going to go back to the thing that I said at the beginning. I think the first thing that we do is we become friends with people who are from these regions, and we hear their stories, and we listen, and we learn, and we ask them what we can do to help. And a lot of times they may be like Samara. They may say, I don't really know right now, but let's figure it out together. And so the first thing isn't policy or anything like that. I think it's friendships. Whatever area that you're in, my guess is there are people from this region around, either in your hometown or in your county or in your state. And I know there can be challenges for knowing how to make those connections. I would just encourage you to begin to be active about how you might make those connections with people. And here in the Oklahoma City area, there's an organization called the Sparrow Project. Sparrow as in the Latin word for hope. Not sparrow as in the bird. So it's spelled S-P-E-R-O. So the Sparrow Project. They work in establishing networks of friendships with immigrants and refugees in the Oklahoma City area. And they've really got a fascinating and wonderful way of approaching it. It's unique. It's difficult because it's not about some programmatic approach. It truly is about friendships. And so if you're in the Oklahoma City area, I encourage you to contact the Sparrow Project. And you can find their website, thesparrowproject.com, or you can find them on Facebook at facebook.com/Sparrow Project. Or you can find them on Twitter by searching for Sparrow Project. And again, that's S-P-E-R-O Project. They really do a fantastic job. They're the way that Samara and I met. They provide all kinds of services in terms of training and just opportunities for connection. And I think that that's really where we begin, by recognizing that we have global neighbors locally that we can connect with and that we can be intentional about. Stay informed, stay engaged. I know it's overwhelming, and sometimes we just kind of want to close our ears to the things that are going on in the world. Please know that the violence is going to get the headlines, but there are people who are working for peace in ways that are truly peaceful in the world. I will be providing some links on the podcast page that Samara will recommend for ways to get good information about what's going on. Our hope is right now that as there's escalated tensions in the region, that the peaceful protests don't get co-opted by the violence. And so that's one of the things that we kind of want to pray for as we're going forward. Thanks again for tuning in and listening.